This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 434, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
All my friends were vampires. Didn't know they were vampires. Turns out I was a vampire myself in the Devil Town.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 434. I'm pushing through. I am Josh Flanagan. I have prejudices. Joining me are Paul Montgomery.
Hi.
And Connor Kilpatrick.
I'm so glad we decided to do this on the hottest day of the year here in California.
Says you. I'm sick of being cold.
I am literally sweating.
We're fermenting a bit.
Go.
Just want to wish a happy 11th birthday to my Cocker Spaniel, Lily.
That's nice. Thank you, Willard. We are iFanboy, and we like comics, and every week we read a bunch of them. Some weeks we only have to read a handful, which is sweet. And then one of us picks the best book they read, and we call that the Pick of the Week. And we talk about it here on the show. We talk about other books from the week. And occasionally, through various environmental and situational forces, it just degrades into goofiness. that may have already be happening. It may stop. I don't know. And that's the fun of this live to tape show. That's a term that I learned, but way back in school. I only got six grand to go on that student loan money to put to good use. Only got $6,000 to go on it. It's fine. Before we get going, there's a warning for spoilers now. So you know what that means. If you haven't read them, you're on your own. Let's not make a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
Connor, this wasn't a surprise to anybody in the world ever.
Nope. I think on a week or a day where it's swelteringly hot in Los Angeles, I think Southern Bastards number one from Image Comics, Jason Aaron, Jason Latour, very appropriate pick of the week.
The Jasons.
It's crime comics at its swelteringly hot. I mean, look at the cover. The cover is hot. It's all reds. I mean, you think about... If you ever been down south to Alabama, Arkansas, I mean, it's hot, sweltering.
This is amazing commentary.
I'm hot. My brain is frying. I think I could put an egg in my head and it would cook. So this is basically, I was thinking about this yesterday after I finished reading it. And, you know, if you were a fan of Scalped and you missed that book, you should be reading this. If you were a fan of this book, you never read Scalped, you should check out Scalped. Because these are very much, I think, thematically similar.
Kissing cousins.
In this story, let's not be racist, Paul.
I see what you're saying there, Connor.
Paul's a racist. In this story,
no, I'm not.
They're all white people, so
you have the return of
classist.
What is his name?
Earl.
What's his name? Pooping. No, the man.
Earl, sorry, isn't it?
Earl. Is it Earl? Yeah, it's Earl.
It's okay. A tub on the mailbox.
Earl. All right. Earl Tubb returns home to claim his. Father's belongings. His father died long ago. His uncle had lived in his father's house. His uncle's finally had to go live in a home. So the house is going to be sold. He's come to pack it up. He hasn't been back in Curragh County, home of the 5-time state 4A football champion running Rebs.
I love the little mascot on the Craw County sign.
He's been back in 4 decades for good reason. And it felt very much just thematically similar to, you know, the opening of Scalped, in which the Dashiell comes back. After
Let's talk about the very first thing you see. Image Comics presents in this wonderful spread by Jason Latour and a dog taking a dump.
Right.
On the side of the
road. In front of a bunch of church signs.
And then we got Earl Tubb coming in. And I tell you, I've said it before, but one of my favorite environmental forces in storytelling is pending dread, pending doom.
Right.
And when you first start seeing all those signs for businesses owned by this guy named Boss. Boss Barbecue. Yeah, they start talking about Coach Boss and everything, and everybody's mentioning this guy. And it's I don't know, it's like Dr. Claw and Inspector Gadget, except more menacing than that. That was a terrible analogy.
So Earl's come home to a town that his father used to be the sheriff of. He used to keep law and order with a big old stick. And he's come back to a town that's now run by a guy named Boss, who runs a lot of the businesses, clearly has a gang of thugs at his beck and call, including football players. He's also apparently the coach of the running Rebs.
It's like Bedford Falls turning into Potterville.
Right. And so now, you know, what's great about Earl is he's not like, you know, 25 and here, you know, the classic hero of the story. He is an old man. And so you've got this, you know, if you've ever been in the South, these guys look like they're carved out of stone.
Yeah.
This Jason Latour gives this guy a great face. And, you know, he's a big old guy. He's in good shape, but he's also, you know, he's clearly in his 50s.
This is like the American Deep South version of Essex County.
Right.
Like, if you look at that face, that's what it sort of reminded me of on Earl Tubb.
And he finds himself by running into an old friend while he's off having a barbecue lunch, which made me really hungry when I was reading it. Gets embroiled in a little bit of criminal activity by saving his friend from the boss's thugs.
When you see those deep fryers, whose fries cooking, I'm like, oh, that's a potential weapon.
That is Chekhov's other rule. It's a lesser known. When you see a deep fryer in the first act, it must be used by the
spooks,
end.
Spooks, season 1, episode 1.
Yeah, so it's just great. And it's a lot of setup. You know, Earl comes to town. We meet the town's people. We find the atmosphere of the story and the town and the sort of fear that runs through everything. And the fact that there's a man named Boss who runs everything. And clearly Earl's going to run into. And I don't know where this is going. I don't know much about the overall story. I know I loved everything about it, though.
The handwritten sound effects and
the last segment in which we cut between Earl cutting down the tree that has grown over his father's grave out of the stick, between his friend getting beaten by the thugs, flashbacks to Earl as a kid, flashback to Vietnam, a dog barking, and it's all done in this really great 3-6-9-12 panel grid.
And great use of color. Black and white, and then really deep red. It's sort of like a, you know, like an artery, you know, just pumping out bolts of blood.
Yeah. I mean, this is Jason Aaron is a son of the South. He's from Alabama. Jason Latour is the son of the South. He is from Carolinas,
yeah. They have two great essays in the back from both of them.
Really about their love-hate relationship with the South. And it's,
well, and I think that
comes through in the story, I think, a lot.
I think that's something that's really interesting about this because, I mean, to be honest, like, I'm not allowed to write this story, I don't think. No. You know, in the sense that, like, it's clearly got some issues. Like, it knows the area really well, but it's clearly got some issues with it in terms of, you know, there's rebel flags all over this thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There is sort of this sense of I don't want to say ignorance, but there's just, like, the people living there, they've got the really small life. And you know, everything is sort of run like it's interesting because Earl left a really long time ago and he came back and people still remember him. They remember him for playing football. So things aren't changing very fast. Like, there's this that sort of tradition in it. And I think it's an interesting comment. It'll be interesting to see how people actually take it. Like, I'd be interested to hear from people who are in the South and like what they think about it. Derogatory, inflammatory.
I hope that people read the essays in the back, especially like Latour talks about, you know, he's always lived in the South and He loves the land. He loves, you know, they love the food. They both love, you know, the music and the literary culture.
You know, and unfortunately, there's that Confederate culture that goes along with it. And there are always going to be, for every region, there's somebody ruining the curve for everybody else. And with this, it's that Confederate culture, that blanket statement, particularly with the South. And he's bitter about that.
He hates those guys and those Confederate flags and everything. And he says in the essay, he's angry. He's coming from a place of anger. And he wants to bury those guys with this comic book. This is a way of getting back at those people because it's sort of like he wants to take the South back. It's really interesting. And I think the best crime fiction comes from a place of anger. Like my favorite, I love Dennis Lehane. One of my favorite Dennis Lehane novels, A Drink Before the War. He's really green. He's really angry. He's got this real righteous anger about, you know, about Boston and what's happening to Boston. He loves that place and he's very bitter about what's happening to it. There's a real passion there that really comes across in the writing and comes across in the art as well. And
I think the passion and the authenticity are really two of the biggest strong suits in the book. It feels real. I mean, my family is from Texas, which is not considered the deep South, at least by them, but I've been through there a lot and it feels very real. And
so there's a kinship there.
God, I really want those ribs.
One of the things that I think is really interesting just about this tonally is that it does have a sort of languid, sort of slowish quality. But then, you know, just sort of beneath the surface is all of this tension and all of this anger and all this, you know, gritted teeth and you know, the muscles of your neck, you know, just, you know, that's always present. So
it's
everything's
volcanic.
Quiet.
It's,
you know, everything's, yeah.
Connor, you mentioned like the you know, his face looks like etched stone.
Yeah.
But like the tectonic plates beneath everything, it's all about the tension underneath the surface. And
well,
that all comes to a head as he's breaking down the tree. Yeah.
He's sitting there eating his ribs and this guy won't leave him alone. You can just see he's staring straight ahead, trying to ignore him. And you can just feel the tension in that scene, you know, leave me alone or something bad's going to happen. But I'm really just looking forward to when the boss shows up in his 3-piece white suit, 10-gallon hat, little sheriff deputy buddy with a basset hound.
Oh man. When is
that's actually, what you're doing now, is generalizing based on a stereotypical program from the 70s and 80s.
But his name is Boss, and his name was Boss.
Well, yeah, I know what you're saying. I know what you're getting at, but it could be considered stereotypical or possibly even insensitive. Anyway, I don't want to make a big deal out of it. I feel like I'm not allowed to talk about this.
Let me just talk about a moment here. Then the friend, and he's you know sitting at the counter with this guy, and you know it's idle chatter, and all of a sudden turns on a dime and he's like, no, get the fuck out of Crawl County.
Yeah.
Fast as you damn well. That's scary. And he's got those pink eyes.
Yeah.
It's just, it's really, really disturbing stuff there.
And again, I'm going to reiterate, if you were a Scalped fan, and I know many people listening to the show were, like we three of us were, please check this out. And if you check this out and you really liked it, you never read Scalped, please go check that out. I mean, I feel like these are very, very similar tonally, and you like them. You know, I can't imagine you wouldn't like one without liking the other.
Yeah.
So
that it's so that it's so personal for both of these guys, and they're both like working at the top of their game. I think. I mean, I've loved other stuff by Jason Latour, and I of course have loved other stuff by Jason Aaron. But it seems like this is, you know, this is personal this time, and it's and they're
this time it's personal.
Paul. Yeah, yeah.
Much like the Amazing Spider-Man number one. Is it? this is the rebooted series. What?
I'm sorry. No, I just wanted to mention there's a guy in Southern Bastards wearing Zubaz pants.
Great. Amazing Spider-Man number one. And this is the rebooted series coinciding with the new movie. Shocker, surprise. This is Peter Parker's back under the mask. Shock, surprise. After the Otto Octavius year. And as everyone who knows about comics knew, he'd be back for the movie. He's back. And so I checked this out. I didn't read any of Superior Spider-Man, and I was thinking
a little at the beginning.
I think I read the very first issue. I was thinking about this as I was reading this issue, which is super long on the iPad. It's 82 pages. I don't know how many it was in the paper with ads.
Read the whole thing?
No, I did not read the whole thing. I read one or two of the backup stories.
Right.
I used to really like that slots of Spider-Man. I remember I was a big fan of Brand New Day in the beginning. Mm-hmm. That's what slot, but I eventually just got kind of tired of it. And Well, I think he's hit the Bendis point that we had with Avengers, where we all loved Bendis' Avengers, but eventually we all thought maybe it's time to give somebody else a shot here.
There does seem to be some rule where apparently only he can write Spider-Man now.
Right.
And I would like to maybe hear somebody read somebody else write Spider-Man for a bit, you know, just for maybe for, you know, just a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, I mean it's nothing against him. I read this issue and it was fine. I enjoyed it.
Yep.
It was well done. I found
Spidey
it all.
Spidey Whiteys.
There's
a lot of jokey Peter in here. So if you
really, you know
that.
What? You know what it felt like? It felt like an update of like basically like a Stan Lee kind of Spider-Man.
Right.
And I know that that's kind of what he does, but I go back to this every once in a while. I read it, so I'm a little disconnected from it. But it really does capture, if you're into capturing that feeling of that sort of 60s Spider-Man, I think there's a little goofiness to it.
Yep.
And that's kind of cool. I like that. I really liked, I don't think I plan on keep reading this. It's not for me, but I really did like the watching him unravel all of the stuff that went on in his life, which actually works for me because I didn't read all of it. So I'm discovering at the same time as he is. So I have to put it together just like he does. And I thought that was done really well. Mm-hmm. It was written really well. And you sort of get a sense of the, not really the havoc that Octavius rot, but the
it changed a lot of his life.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Like that's
he's a doctor now.
Why is that girl so kind of short?
Yeah, well, that was kind of odd. Like I knew and I've seen that character drawn by other artists. Here, I thought it was a little bit odd because it like
drew
I forgot,
her like a dwarf,
like a.
I'm not being facetious. Like,
well, I thought like a little kid.
Is she meant to be a little person?
I mean, evidently she's supposed to be short.
Well, because I first thought I was like, wow. I like Bocello, but he's drawing, you know, he's too little. But then
it's not Bocello, it's
Ramos.
I mean, Ramos, sorry.
Yeah.
I like Ramos a lot, but, you know, too little. But then I realized this actually was a point. I guess that's who she is. I liked also that they basically got rid of the Mayor JJJ things back in the paper. It was sort of like a rebooting of the back to basics. It was good. I don't know. I may or may not continue reading. I do think, you know, we learned the lesson with when they shuffled everybody up, you know, a year ago from all their books. And it was really, it's been really good to get new blood in those books.
Absolutely.
I think we all thought it was a really great thing Marvel did. You know, Bendis on the X-Men books have been great. You know, all these guys moving around really injected new life into these books. I feel like it's time for Spider-Man. And it's nothing against Dan Slott. I just think it's been such a long time.
I'm not happy with what they did with Black Cat here.
I did not like that. That was the one thing I didn't like was the making Black Cat sort of the mean and evil, out for revenge character.
But I mean, there's lots of stories doing the other kind. So if they do that for a little while, so you know, whatever.
Right.
But it was good. It was well drawn. I know that Giuseppe Camuncoli, who I really only knew from Hellblazer, actually.
Right.
It's very good.
Is Spider-Man 2099 in the Marvel Universe?
I don't know. That, I mean, I was lost on. As you go through the back,
they're going to be doing some more.
Right, but in this backup story, he's looks like he's in the modern day.
I lost track of where that story went, but evidently, he is around this time.
So it was. I mean, it was a good issue. So if you're a Spider-Man fan and you've been waiting for Peter Parker to return, thinking he never would.
Yeah, I think
would,
if you've liked what's been going on, then you'll be like, it's good stuff.
Right. Did you see the Ramon Perez art in the back?
I did, but I didn't really.
What do you think of this idea of someone else getting bit by the spider?
Yeah, I didn't like that either.
You don't like that idea?
No.
When I first heard about it,
messing with the origin. They keep tinkering, and they need to stop.
Well, I was surprised that no one had ever done that before.
Right, but just it's like the more they tinker, the less special Peter Parker is.
Sure.
Well, I think you could say that by having somebody else get bit, then you could actually be showing how special Peter Parker is, because it's not the spider bite, it's him. It's just, you know.
I would say I prefer that to, like, you know, Peter Parker Industries, like that whole thing. Like, that's Iron Man's thing. And yeah, you can say, well, you know.
Well, that was the point of it, wasn't it? I mean, Otto was trying to do that, I guess, I assume. And that's why they tore it down.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, Spider-Man number one, I thought it was a fine, although it was $7, so.
Yeah.
Not a great barrier for entry there. So Vertigo Quarterly CMYX.
SMIC.
What does that stand for?
That's a Paul Allard joke, actually. Comics make you kooky. I don't know. That's a comic book
it's,
term.
It's CMYK is the color.
Oh, CMYK. Oops.
CMYK. Yeah.
The color profile for print, not digital.
Right.
And this one,
RGB is digital.
And so this is going to be a quarterly thing. And so this one is about cyan. So it's all blue. So there have been a couple of these Vertigo anthologies in the past year. Like, you know, the one we liked,
the time travel one.
Time travel one was really good.
Right.
I think it's been sort of diminishing returns since then. Like each one has had less and less to sort of phone home about. This one was interesting. It you know, made the rounds because the Joe Keating and Ken Gehring story, Joe Keating wrote about on his blog that there was some...
They rewrote it.
The editorial rewriting at least about the end of it. And it was, he said he doesn't know if people are going to... Maybe they'll like it more. He says, but it's sort of like he's too close to it to really be able to tell. But he does know that it's not what they intended the ending to be. And so I read it from that perspective, trying to figure out what...
Too.
They you know, and I don't exactly know what.
Well, basically, it sounded like they changed some of the dialogue, which changed some of the story, and they didn't tell him about it until it was too late to change, and that was just the case. And he was very diplomatic about it. He wasn't blaming anybody. But I will tell you that completely colored me reading this book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It made me unexcited to read it.
That story or the whole thing?
The whole thing. I was just like, oh. I mean, it really cast sort of a pall on it.
Yeah.
The other thing I've discovered is that one of the reasons I think people maybe notice that we don't tend to cover these very often or very well when we do is I think I don't like reading an anthology like this in a really short amount of time. And that's kind of what we have when we do the shows. Like,
yeah, you
want to
live with
really
it for
fast.
A bit.
Yeah, I mean, I find the only way I get through anthologies is to sort of stick them on something and read like a story at a time over time. And if I have to sit here and sort of mainline eight-page story, I don't take them in. And I start looking for any excuse to sort of skip past. I don't like this one. I move on.
I don't know. I feel like in the past we've not only covered them but been very complimentary towards them.
Yeah, I know, but that's like I never finish all of them, and I you know, like some of them I sort of skip through.
Well, you end up
I was looking forward. Yeah, I was looking. I will never forget that the Tom King, Tom Fowler one is my favorite short story in a Vertigo story, Vertigo anthology of all time. But like, there's a jock drawn story in here that I didn't understand at all.
It's a little odd.
This is some pretty – I felt like these were pretty out there in terms of – I don't know. Sci-fi is not the
word. What was a thematic thread?
Blue.
I don't know that – I don't – I guess. Was it just blue?
It's just – basically, this is your play with blue, and, you know, a lot of them played with cyan color. Some of them – I mean, I'm skipping – let's see. I'm flipping through this next one, and it's just this girl has a blue streak in her hair. There's another one, the – James Tinian, the fourth one, it's about blue eyes. There's this fairy tale at the end of the world, and a girl sees beauty in the dystopia, in the ruins and everything, and she dies after getting infected, and the boyfriend is like, what does she see that's so beautiful? I've got to know. So he goes to like the Wizard of Oz, basically, of the dystopia, and says, you need to tell me what she saw. And he brought her eyes with him in like this cube. Ugh. Yeah. And it's really jarring. And they do this experiment on him, and he realizes that what she saw was her love reflected in his eyes. And, you know, they play with the idea that he sees his own reflection later on, and he can kind of summon up, you know, that hope of what she saw and that love that they had. And
so, Paul, if you think there have been diminishing returns since the Time Warp one, Time Warp was the name of it, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy this one? Are you going to read the next one? Or
I mean, it's like I'll check it out. You know, if I'm looking at it, I'm going to check it out.
I'm at least curious to see what's going on. I mean, there's a Fabio Moon story in here. I have no idea what it's about.
Good, because I was going to say, I was like, all right, this is awesome. It's really pretty.
It starts off
with what it was.
Caption, I heard the news today, and you got a guy who looks kind of vaguely like John Lennon. He's got the glasses and the hair, and he says, oh, boy. And then there's another guy who says, ? And they lose their gallery space where they're making these vases, and then they talk about maybe moving to Los Angeles. But then we'll have to buy a car. I have no idea what.
Yeah, it was.
It feels
it was
like
piece
of.
Strange.
It feels like a chapter of something longer. I just have no context for it.
So Magenta is next.
I will say apparently.
Yeah, I guess.
There's a story in here, Madam Bluebeard. Again, I'm not entirely sure what it's about, but the artist is Javi Fernandez. It was really gorgeous art. That's my favorite
that
thing.
That's
really
nice art, yeah.
Really, really nice looking art. So that's a name I think you should look out for.
Magenta, yellow, Kelvin.
If you're an artist, I guess you can work with, okay, color. I can work with that. And then maybe that'd be better if it was like a writer artist doing their own thing. As a collaboration, as a writer, if someone told me blue, I'd be like, what the hell am I supposed to write about blue?
So let's talk about this then for a second.
Yeah.
What on earth would you have done to the story to change what the writer had done when all of the other things in here are so esoteric? Like, what sort of strange changes would they have made?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Normally if you're talking about, oh, the editor went in and they changed a bunch of stuff after the fact, it would be to make it more palatable. But clearly that was not a goal, because this is some very, abstract stuff on the whole.
Yeah.
I find that very interesting.
I found that reading the first story and then starting up the Keating story is the second story in the anthology. And I was like, I had that exact same thought. They're not trying to make it more palatable.
So let's make this saleable for the people. That was not a goal. They were like, let's muck this up because it's too clear.
I'm just morbidly curious as to what they did, because it's not obvious.
No. Anyway, the art, and Joe had pointed this out, the Ken Gehring art is once again gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I can always love to see more from him.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good segue into the Rick Remender Image Comics block of Black Science 6 and Deadly Class 4.
Yes.
With Black Science 6, last time we mentioned that Mateo Scalera must be stopped lest he destroy us all. No one stopped him. So here, he is again. Open the first page. A gorgeous image of this alien ape eyeball. And, well, we talked about before how this book continues to surprise every month, and it surprised even more by killing off the main character. So yeah. Who the fuck knows? I love it. There's no way to predict where this book is going.
Kill off the main character. Let him, put him in charge of, put the other guy in charge of the children. And there's multiple versions of the children. The guy who he hates.
Who's responsible over and over throughout the multiverse of destruction of all plans. It's great. And, there's a little moment in here. I feel like, and I could be reaching, but I feel like between Black Science and Deadly Class, like we are just... You're kidding, this sort of scalpel cutaway view of Rick Remender's psyche. because I feel like he's really putting himself out there and in it. And I don't really think that's too much of a leap, because if you read through, and we'll get to Deadly Class in a second, and I read the last two at the same time, so it may have been, but at one point he's talking about the Smiths. Mm-hmm. And the guy was like, oh, this is so gay. And he's like, are you kidding me? This is and I use that term because the character did. And he's like, are you kidding me? You know how brave it is to put your feelings out there and what you actually think? And I can't help but think that, that's what he's putting into this. It's what he put into Fear Agent. It's what he does. It's how he gets his work across, especially in his creator-owned stuff. And as you go through these, and it's just, they're exceptionally visceral. And it must be exhausting.
He's laying it out there, especially with Deadly Class. But Black Science for a second. The only disappointing thing is that we have to wait till July for the next issue.
So we haven't stopped Mateo Scalera. We've set him on pause.
Slowed him down.
Slowed him down just a little bit, but he'll be back more powerful.
The very
than
last. The
well, I don't
cover,
know if you've seen
cover,
this,
Josh.
The weather has been out of control. You got tornadoes. You got flooding. I mean, I think we can pretty easily attribute this to Mateo Scalera.
So this is a good, actually it's the sixth issue, clearly it's the final issue of the first volume trade, and it's a great status quo changer in that this group of scientists and their family who have been bouncing around the different dimensions through the pillar that have been stuck in this ape version of themselves, of this dimension. They find another pillar that the apes have, and in the course of escaping, the main character scientist, who's kind of a dick, but also the main character, not kind of, was the main character, gets killed. And the bad guy, quote unquote bad guy from before, who had been sabotaging the whole mission, is now, the alpha male of the group. So
it was brutal. And his spine gets crushed, our main character, and then he's talking about, he's thrashing in his death throes and saying that you're going to live and you're going to walk away from this. And I know that you're going to take care of them. And internally, the monologue is about, you know, and this goes way back to issue one, about how he's ignored the things that matter. And he doesn't even have a photo of his family, of the kids or anything to look at as he lays dying. And Scalera, the way he, you know, portrays the anguish, you know, and he's so good.
I also, I want to give a quick shout out to the concept in this, that basically, like, they go in and there's all these monkeys and there's baby monkeys everywhere and they can't figure out why they're not protecting them. And the idea is that there are living gaseous beings who are just using the monkeys as hosts. And I was right. Like, there you go.
And then on top of that, one of the beings infects the girl in the group before they jump. So now they not only do they have the kind of bad guy running the group, they're, one of them is an alien.
Not you, Gleep Glop. Never trust a man what's made of gas.
So this book is amazing. And so
I'm just saying you can throw all the emotional stuff in there.
Yeah.
And then you can at the other side take that and put in these giant hard sci-fi concepts.
Yeah.
That's super impressive. And then get these artists. You know, I don't want to discount Dean White in the least either.
He's doing the painted art. The color, which is great.
It's a package. This thing is just stupid.
And Deadly Class, I like more of each issue.
Yeah, I think I prefer Deadly Class just a little bit over Black Science. And
really,
yeah, I love them both though. I mean,
you must love one and hate the other one. That's how it works.
No, but I really like it, and I just
don't change your mind.
It just feels all the more personal. And I think, you know, the Wes Craig art, the layouts are so amazing. And this is such a this is a trip. This is literally a trip. I mean, they're going to Vegas.
It's a road trip.
It's a road trip.
Dead show to buy drugs that they can then go back to their school and sell for a profit. And of course,
well, they also want to kill the one kid's dad.
Right, but the impetus for the trip was to get the drugs, and then in a way they're also going to kill the dad in Vegas. But because the main character's in solitary confinement for last issue's murder that he committed, it wasn't sanctioned, or it was the wrong person he killed.
So
the other rule they broke is his friends broke him out of solitary because they realized that they don't check on you during solitary. So as long as they bring him back before his sentence is up, they will get away with it and end up running into some hippies and at the Grateful Dead show. And the main character has a bad trip.
Yeah, they get some bad acid that doesn't do anything. And then they get the good acid and he's like, whatever. And he puts the whole thing, he wads it up, puts it in his mouth, the whole sheet. And the guy who sold it to him is like running. He's like, good luck with that. And runs off.
That made me laugh.
And it's like 35 minutes later and he's like curled up, you know, in fetal position under the car and they have to talk him out of it. There was a urban legend around these parts about a guy who had some acid and ran into some cops and he ran off and he made the mistake of hiding it under his shirt. And so it was pressed up against his body and he was sweating as he was running. Mm-hmm. And he ended up thinking that he was a glass of water.
Oh, and was that little fat kid you?
No, that wasn't me. And I didn't say the kid was fat.
That was a line from a movie, by the
way.
Okay. Connor, did you catch that at all? Is that just me? Somebody out there will catch it.
Okay. And so
why are you so fat?
He had to go through therapy to get him to believe he was a bigger and bigger container to contain the water because he's worried about tipping over and the water coming out.
At first, I thought this story was going on too long, but then that was a good ending. So I appreciate you telling it.
I made it longer.
Everything comes to a head of this story. There's a girl in the group that likes the main character, and her boyfriend or her friend or who likes her clearly is tailing them with he's got murder in his mind.
A jilted ex boyfriend is chasing.
And then the guy from before, whose face is all fucked up, he's tailing them also. It's all going to come to a head. They should also just call this book Blood on the Page because, you know, Remender just opens up his veins for this one.
Really? I mean, like, when you thought the other one was pretty intense, this is like, oh, yeah?
Yeah. I think this is the sharpest writing, and I'm in love with the art, too, so.
Yeah. Good stuff. So when Black Science Volume 1 comes out, which I'm sure will be next month or the month after, you should head on over to ifanboy.com/Amazon. Pick it up there. We get a little piece of the action. You get an amazing comic. Amazon gets a little less money. We get to keep the lights on. Everybody wins. So go to ifanboy.com/Amazon for all of your purchases, and we really appreciate when you do that. Also, ifanboy.com/registration or for $3 a month, $30 a year, or any random donation amount, you can help us directly by giving to the show and helping us continue on. We appreciate everyone who does that. Batman Eternal 4, I thought, was the closest we've come yet to the tone of that flash forward issue that we had in the Batman series, in which we saw this world and we saw Dustin Nguyen drawing it. And here, Dustin Nguyen's drawing it. And it's focused mostly on Batgirl and Stephanie Brown. So I thought this was the closest we've come yet to that. Not on the mark, because it's not Snyder writing it, but I thought it was more fun than this book has been so far.
So he's not writing from here. Like, he worked on the first three, and then after that, you're on your own.
He's plotting it, or helping plot. He's the showrunner. So I thought this was okay. I mean, this is... I don't know what to make of this yet. I'm not sure, but I did...
Are you enjoying it? Or
it's okay.
You're reading it?
I'm reading it. I thought this issue was gorgeous. I really did. I thought there was some really fantastic panels.
Dustin Nguyen's really one of the... He's starting to be one of the more underrated artists, I feel like.
There's this great sort of impressionistic panel of Stephanie walking through the streets of Gotham in the middle of the night, and there's like a fire in the background, and it's very shadow heavy, and looks like it just brush on the page. It's really, really beautiful shot. As long as he's going to draw some issues,
it's like impressionistic almost in the background.
Really, really nice.
If you're going to do something like that, that's cool. It's a big step up in the art department.
Yeah,
and you can't always count on that with a weekly book.
'Tis true.
So and I think the same thing goes for the scripts on a weekly book too. I mean, you're not like each week isn't going to be the, you know, you're leading to touchstones, but you know, I think I prefer the pace of a monthly book than
I do like weekly, and I think they've shown when if they're done well, like 52 was, which was so long ago.
Yes, it was.
It can be an amazing experience.
Nearly a decade at this point.
52 was an amazing experience to read week to week, but, you know, hasn't been so good since then.
So, Chew is one of those books that I don't feel like we talked about in a while. You guys still reading this?
I moved the trade on it years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll make this quick. Basically, issue 41, again, we're building up to, we're in our third act, I think, here. I guess the thing that was really interesting about this one is that it signals a paradigm shift in that Tony Chu had basically been in a sort of daze for many, many issues before this. And in this one, like, he's the hero. Like, he's the most respected agent in the FDA, which is a really fun way to sort of do things differently.
Right.
And he gets a little bit of happiness and some good stuff happens to him in this issue.
Well, we know that's happened in the past, and the very next issue shit went bad. So
yeah, well, I mean that could definitely happen, but it's fun and it continues to be imaginative. People are all killed with a fudge gun. So there's like people covered in chocolate screaming in terror, just frozen in their tracks.
Just
like
drown in fudge.
Like a delicious chocolate Pompeii.
Listen, there's a lot of ways to go. Many of them horrible.
Yeah,
that is not one of those ways.
Well, they don't look happy.
Delicious fudge.
Yeah,
it's rich though.
Fudge gun.
Fudge Paul, gun. when you're imminently about to die, you don't have to worry about calories.
It's in the middle of this, by the way, there's just a 2-page spread of Pollo fighting the Unisaurus Rex, which is a pink dinosaur with a purple and green mohawk and a unicorn. It's for no reason. And they're just like, I'm gonna put this in here.
That's
so,
like Axe Cop
and then
territory.
The dinosaur. Listen, and the dinosaur has a heart tattoo that says Ian Malcolm. Ian Malcolm rules. So the chaos is at hand.
I really do love Chew. I really
it was a good issue, and I just wanted to call it out. It's what you expect out of Chew, and it's totally fine. But they're still doing it, you know, all the time.
They're wrapping.
Life finds a way.
Is it 60 issues wrapping up at?
That sounds right.
Around there, somewhere around
I will break out my piss poor
Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum anytime.
So All New X-Men 26, in which Cyclops finds that sometimes ladies like an older, more mature man, especially when they're an older, more mature version of their boyfriend, especially if they're, you know, heavily muscled. And the boyfriend left.
I just wanted to call this out because I thought I was really impressed by the end of that one scene. Jean, basically Scott and Jean are talking, and Jean puts her hands her hand on Scott's hand, and there's a pause, there's a moment, and you go, oh wow, this is a thing, and Scott just goes, that can never happen. And then he walks out, and Kitty, who is I love Kitty's role, who is like, I don't ever want you in a room with her alone. And just those couple of moments made the entire issue worth it for me. I thought they were very genuine. I thought they were very true, and really good character stuff. Really interesting stuff.
Yes, ma'am.
Pretty edgy stuff.
That was really, really, really good. And then I love the cliffhanger in which the evil X-Men from the future are walking on the like much like the walkers from Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They're walking. The White Walkers.
White Walkers are walking towards the X-Men base.
So. I was thinking of The Thing, because you've got a Shapeshifter is somewhere in there, and there's snow outside, and, you know, X-23, Laura is her name?
Laura.
Which I didn't realize that. I was reading the comments.
Neither
like,
did Bobby.
And
which was awesome.
Yeah. And she comes in, and she's been wounded by someone who is pretending to be young Scott.
Right.
And you know, one of the people in this room, it's such a classic, you know, sci-fi thing. One of you is a, you know, a traitor.
Twilight Zone, that great episode. in the diner. Mm-hmm. This is what you get when you shuffle the writers up, and Bendis is still doing a wonderful job on X-Men.
This is a really good issue for Eminent as well, I thought. I really like the outdoor scene with X-23. Just looked great.
Yeah, I gotta say, like at this point, I feel like I lost the three, because this is the one that crossed over with Guardians of the Galaxy, and I think I even dropped off for a little bit. But I look at the cover and I see Bendis doing these characters he's really good at, and Stuart Immonen, and I'm gonna read that. I don't even care. I just want to look at it.
You didn't need to know anything. Right, they summed it up in the first scene. What had happened? She was in space. She was charged with crimes, and then it ended. So really didn't.
It's a pro.
I think next week we get the Cyclops in outer space stuff. From Rocca. I'm excited about that.
Cool.
They're going places with this concept. I like this whole idea of the young X-Men. When I first heard about it, I was like, but it's
really, you know, the one thing Marvel's going to do lately is stick with something.
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Man's going to be replaced with Dr. Octopus for 2 years. Whoa.
It was only a year.
Whatever.
We figured that out.
Still, that's a long time.
They double ship.
Conviction.
Yeah. Avengers AI 12. These are the robot Avengers.
This is the robot Avengers, basically. And you got Hank Pym, and you've got was it Victor Mancha from The Runaways, and Doombot's in there. Doombot's pretty great. And this is Sam Humphries and Andre Araujo's last issue. And Andre Araujo, and if I'm pronouncing that last name incorrectly, I'm very sorry, because he's one of my favorite up and coming artists. And he does this thing where, I mean, I know he's heavily influenced by like Mobius as well as like Otomo. There's a lot of Akira in here, and it's a great combination. And I'm heartened to know that he's going to be doing more stuff. I think he's going on to Ultimate FF with Josh Fialkov coming up, and so I'll be looking forward to that, because I was interested in that first Ultimate FF issue, but the art wasn't quite for me. So
I agree. I forgot to bring that up when he was on the show. And
I was wavering back and forth. I was like, let's give it another few issues and see where this goes. But because I was so conflicted on that book. But anyways, this is the end of that story. And, you know, a lot of threads left dangling, but there's still some cool stuff in here. There's a Galactus floating prone in outer space with tentacles coming out of his eyes. And Demetrios chopping his head off, the big Galactus head off, and, you know, like riding it through space, and crazy visual stuff. And it takes place in 12,000 AD, and I kind of love the ambition of the book. And you know, I'm sorry to see it go so soon. Star Wars Rebel Heist, did you guys know about this? This is Matt Kent doing Star
Wars.
I've heard of this. Yeah, and there's going to be four issues, and each issue is basically going to be a character study. So this first one is Han Solo. Second one is going to be Princess Leia. The third one is going to be Chewbacca. And we're going to round it out with Luke Skywalker.
I was really hoping you were going to say a different name at the end. I was waiting for it, but that's fine. There's no Wedge until.
No Wedge until.
It's fine.
We could see Wedge. This takes place. This is Dark Horse's happy place at the moment right now with Star Wars. Is that space
at the moment?
At
is
the moment,
heat.
Yeah.
When anything comes out,
is yeah, has place? Been. Is it's that area between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. So this is sort of concurrent with the regular Star Wars right, logo.
Yeah. Guys, I don't know if you know this, but none of this is going to be canon, so I don't know why we're talking about it. I mean, if you enjoy it, I guess it's fine, but what's the point?
Okay. It's so goddamn hot. It is hot. So,
it's not canon. Is it good?
I didn't say anything about it. I just said what it was. I'll be very quick. It's a character study.
I want the show to end because I'm just going to pass out.
There's a guy who wants to join the Rebel Alliance, and he's going to meet up with somebody, some kind of contact on Corellia, and it ends up being Han Solo. And he talks about how, you know, fascinating Han Solo is, and it's basically a chance for Kent to talk about how cool Han is. But by the end of it, Han is making so many reckless choices and gets them captured.
That's what cool dudes do, man. Yeah. They don't think about the rules or the consequences.
He gets them captured. But then this guy who was thinking about joining the Rebel Alliance is like, you know what? I don't think I want to join the Rebel Alliance. This is stupid. I'm gonna turn on Han. And he turns his gun on him and aids the Empire. And
well, fuck that guy.
So it's a little bit of espionage, kind of a thread. And I think Chewie's going to probably have to rescue him.
So Shadows of the Empire doesn't count either? So what did I waste my time?
Those are the books we're going to talk about this week.
Caesar.
Prince Caesar is not even a real character.
You can talk about other books of the week that we didn't get the chance to speak of or to comment on these books, whatever you want in the comment section at fanboy.com.
What about the story about Bossk? Does that count still?
What story about Bossk?
Any.
Tales of the Bounty Hunters.
Yeah. That counts.
You're damn right it counts.
Those were cool. I like those. Zuckus, Tales from Zuckus, the Cantina.
Zuckus is another man what's made of gas.
Was he?
Yeah. He's in a gas bag suit.
I always liked Dengar. I like the guy wrapped in bandages.
Dengar's story. He was a swoop pilot.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
Han Solo screwed him up, and now he...
Are they in a race, and then Han came down on top of his head or something?
Yeah.
Like on his bike and really messed him
up? It's literally been probably 15, 16 years since I read them, so it's getting spotty, but yeah, swoop.
Josh, you want to read the audience question?
I really just want to talk about Star Wars.
All right, well, we can do that too.
It's fine. Matt from London, England writes in and said he read a while back that Starbucks grew to a point where, being a franchise, it became its own competitor. One Starbucks store's biggest competitor was just another Starbucks store down the street. This got me thinking, not for too long, but a good while. I love that that's still going. If that, that model applies to comics, specifically to a publisher like Image. I see where you're going here. With Image sort of operating like franchises for creators to publish their own books, we're reaching a point that with so many new number ones and so much quality work on sale that Image creators are fighting each other for the same audience. Personally, my cash and time quota for comics means I've dropped quite a few Image books to make way for new titles I'm interested in and moved a couple of others to trade. I would love to hear your thoughts. It's a very interesting and I think valid question.
I don't think it's quite to the Starbucks level.
No, but
at first I thought all comics are competing for each other's time and money. But then I think it's...
Marvel and DC connect themselves to each other, so it's kind of like buy one, buy them all, or at least some of them. Mm-hmm. Whereas these really are, you want to pick your flavor. But, that's kind of like, I think, for Image, it's kind of like having lots of different ice cream flavors.
Yeah.
And as long as somebody's picking...
Or donuts. Let's talk about donuts.
I could do that. You know I could. but then again, no, because you don't really eat unlimited ice cream. Well, some I would. I really like ice cream.
It's tough because it sort of presupposes you only have a limited space in your non-Marvel DC budget for other things.
I think whereas you're not talking about non-Marvel DC, it predisposes you do have a limit on your comics. And if you were to buy everything that Image is publishing right now, you would be spending a pretty penny.
Yes, absolutely. See, for me, I've been dropping DC Marvel books and buying more Image books.
Absolutely, but it does get to a point where certain Image books where I'm like, okay, I enjoyed this.
Totally.
I don't need to read it forever. Mm-hmm. And I'll see what else is going on because there really are ton of choices. And I know it sounds right now, if you don't want Marvel or Image, in a big way, that's what's happening that's interesting. Or I'm saying, if you don't want Marvel or DC, what's happening is almost exclusively at Image. I mean, this used to be Vertigo's purview, and even Vertigo wasn't producing nearly this much volume.
No.
At any point. So that's really, it's very interesting. And like, you can't really, there's no vertigo, or there's no, see, I'm even getting these terms mixed up. There's no image tone. There's no house style, I guess.
No, it is, they are independent contractors almost. You know, they are completely different. Southern Bastards is nothing like Black Science, which is nothing like East of West, which is nothing like
the only thing Saga. I could think, though, and this is a broad generalization, I know that, but like some people might look at, okay, Image, those are my sci-fi books in a lot of cases. Or you could just say, you know, like I have my Walking Dead, I'm definitely going to get that every month. But then of these other sci-fi Image books, since there are so many, I'll take this one and this one. I'll have to catch up on that and trade or something. Whereas, you know, you have your superheroes that you've been following for years and years and years. And of course, I got to get Batman every month. But with these new properties, I do want some science fiction, but I don't want everything. If I have a limited budget, I don't want everything I'm reading to be, you know, mad scientist stories, because there's bazillions to choose from.
I really do think that all comics are competing against each other.
Yeah, I think they're all.
I think you go in, I mean, like Marvel is all competing against each other, you know, in a way, you know, I really like the Avengers, but but I like the X-Men, but I don't want
to
do.
Well, they've always encouraged everything. You to break off into families, right? The Avengers family books, the Spider-Man family.
Well,
the
it could work two ways.
And Superman.
This is my X-Men book that I'm going to read, or I'm going to read all X-Men stuff instead of reading Spider-Man stuff or Avengers stuff. I'm going to drop those in favor.
You know, when they link stories throughout the books, that's their way of getting you to buy all those family of books to keep you in that family.
But I don't think I don't think it's really exclusive to the public. I think it's just, you know, there's a bunch of things that they're offering, and you're going to buy as many of those as you want.
Yeah, no one says you got to buy all the books, all the Image books. I mean, there's a lot of great ones. I don't even. I mean, as great as and we read a lot of Image books. We just don't even read a quarter of the ones they put out.
Yeah, there's a ton. Probably about that. I mean, there's a ton. There's a lot of other stuff, actually. Yeah.
I look through that list of Image books every week, and I probably get 1 to 3 of the 8 or 9 they're putting out every week. So you don't have to read them all. Also, there's nothing wrong with reading them in trade. If you're reading a lot of books and it's overwhelming, or you need to save some money, and nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, you move around, you flit around, you go back. You know, you want to stop reading something, and later on, you find out it was good. You just go back, you get the trade, you pick it up. You know, it's a brave new world.
It's hard to wonder if they're causing a glut because so many of the books are so good.
Really, yeah, but I can't imagine there's a world where you're going to complain that they're putting out too many good books.
Right, I feel weird saying, man, they should stop putting out great books because. That's,
I mean,
the
problem,
point.
You really, when you have a problem, is when you're just putting out a bunch of volume and they're not great.
Right.
You know, actually, for a little while, I don't know that's true so much, but really Marvel was going for a thing where they were putting out a lot of really good books. Like, surprising amount of, like, after they did their little shuffle.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a ton of really quality Marvel books, and I had to be like, I can't read all these. Like, I stopped reading, like, Wade's Hulk. It was perfectly good. I just, there was too many books. I couldn't keep up.
Well, so in that sense, they are all Starbucks to each other. And it's not just Image, it's every comic.
I mean, honestly, comics are small enough that all of, they're all sort of in the,
and because time is precious and so is money, so you literally can't read 35 books a week, at least to do this show you can't. And I wouldn't want to read 35 books a week anyway, but
it doesn't make it as much fun,
you know. It doesn't, you just can't read that many, and there's and I think I could probably find 35 books a week I could read,
sure,
but I don't want to. And so in that sense, I make a choice. And then so one doesn't get consumed, and therefore.
Well, one of the things that I think is interesting is that one thing that I think Image has done for me is I do think that they have crowded out some of the other smaller publishers.
Sure. I don't read any IDW or Dark Horse anymore. I made one or two Dark Horse books.
I read some Dark Horse, but it feels like people are. It feels like not only are they doing Dynamite. That at the shelf, I think that they're doing that behind the scenes. I think people are taking their books to them instead of to other places, and I think that that's making a real impact on them on the market.
Well, like, that's where the heat is in the independent comic world.
I mean,
deal's the best deal.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And look what IDW, you know, more power to them. They can do what they want, but now they're a licensed powerhouse. You know, for
those
a while there was a lot of original material. I know they totally do, but it's not for me. And you'll find it. We don't talk about them as much because we don't really read the Transformers or My Little Pony or Ghostbusters, whatever all that is. You know, they're fun to dally in, I think, but that's kind of all they do now, which is really strange. I've even dropped off from Boom a bit. I check it out. I look for it. I just don't see a lot that interests me. Whereas the stuff that's going on, in Image, it tickles my vertigo bone, is what it does.
Where else does it tickle you, Josh?
No, it's just in my vertigo bone.
That's
see, if you enunciate the word bone just a little bit differently, it sounds worse. It's what I just learned. It's my show.
Paul, do you find yourself having to drop as you add?
There's a lot of things, especially if we haven't been talking about it and it's something that maybe you guys aren't latching onto, then there's less reason for me to keep up with something. So I'll let it slide for a bit. And then 1 week when it's like a light week, I was like, oh, remember what was going on in this Image book or something, or this Marvel book? Mm-hmm. And I go back and read the last three or four issues that I'd missed.
I'll tell you something. One thing that happened to me on was our good friend Charles Soule's book, Letter 44, which is being published by Image. I'm sorry, Oni.
Oni, right. Yeah.
Right. It's oddly, it's not an Image book. But like that first issue was killer. And it comes out regularly, and I just kind of forgot about it because it's just so much stuff. I sort of missed it. So I went and I just bought like several of them so I can catch up because it was great. I love that first issue. And obviously, he's doing great work everywhere else. But
yeah, and I still will go back and read things that you guys have raved about. I've talked about how I read Ms. Marvel after Paul raved about it. I went back and I read Magneto that Paul recommended. That was really good. I've been starting to go back and read Superior Foes of Spider-Man, which you guys have been raving about. So I have been adding books.
You know what I just went back and finished? League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
What?
From like the top shelf ones, the Century books.
Oh, I didn't even think I finished those.
They were great.
Were they?
I really loved it. I was like, all right, I used to love this book, but like I just had let it sit there. I'd let that one of those little, they're like like prestige editions really. And that one it sat on my bedside table for like 2 years.
Yeah.
And I finally finished them and they were great. I was like, these are wonderful. And I'd forgotten about those.
I thought the third volume I so did not like, so I don't think I got really jazzed about those.
Well, no, the one with the 3D glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was not great. These are better than that. It's different characters, I guess, if you get used to it after that. But if you've got them
last
around.
Last thing I read was the Nemo one.
Oh, yeah.
The go to the North Pole.
Mm. Yeah.
Nemo's
yeah.
daughter, actually.
Now, Josh, if they put out a book starring Forlom and Zuckuss and Dengar, would you read that one?
I tend to read Star Wars books with creators I know.
Can we get Nick Spencer and Steve Lieber to do that book?
Oh,
ooh.
There you go.
Ooh.
Are they both still on Superior Foes? I feel like it's changed up. I think Nick Spencer might be off. I don't want to tell you that, Connor. Don't worry about what
they've
I just
said. They've
at
least had fill-ins lately.
Yeah, that's what it is.
But he's on Avengers World right
well,
now.
Then perfect. They can go over to Dark Horse and do that book. And
for another month while they have the... No,
the
they're
bank.
Just hanging... No, they're going to do it at Marvel. It's perfect.
Oh, yeah, perfect. I'm going to go to Dark Horse. They can wait.
Will it be... Oh, hold on. Is it going to be canon? Will it be part of the Vision
story?
Oh, my
God. I'd read the hell out of that book. That would be great.
Are you kidding me? Pick of the week every week. Make it weekly.
Greedo's head.
Just mounted on the wall.
Yeah.
Like a deer.
That's what it's like when we let our show sort of ramble a little bit.
Shocker.
So there you go,
a shocker print couch.
Thanks for writing us in. He wrote in at contact@ifanboy.com. He could have also called the voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, but he's in England, so I understand why he didn't do that. But if you're not in England and want to call that line, tell us your name, tell us where you're from, keep the voicemail around 30 seconds, and we appreciate it. That's how you get on the show. Then inspire us to end up talking about a book that doesn't exist, but we wish does.
Matt, we would like to say cheers.
Cheers, Matt.
See you. Cheers.
So, Paul, it's going to be a very busy
month
for special edition podcast. We got the Amazing Spider-Man 2 podcast, which you can hear behind this show on the feed. So go back and look for our thoughts on Amazing Spider-Man 2. Paul and I and FMboy writer Timmy Wood talking about that movie. And you can also find that streaming on ifanboy.com. And then next week, we're going to talk about Son of Batman, the latest DCU animated original film. And then, Paul, at some point, you'll finish up your Akira.
Yeah, we just got to find the spot where we can fit that
in. The problem
is
you've run into con season now.
Yeah, it's con season, so it's a little tricky.
Scotty Young is Paul's co-host.
We haven't forgotten about it. Don't worry. We'll do it.
And then finally, we wrap the month up with X-Men Days of Future Past, which comes out Memorial Day weekend, which there'll be a podcast on that as well. So lots of special edition shows this week, as many as you can handle, or this month. Oh, Jesus, it's hot. I even have all the lights off and all the shades drawn to keep it cool in here. That's not.
Don't you get the ocean breezes and whatnot?
Yes, and that's how that tells you how hot it is in Los Angeles right now.
Take your coat off.
Oh, that's true. I should have taken
take
my
the parka off.
My laptop is still warm from being up in the valley this week or today all day.
Hey, buddy, I don't want to hear it. I lived in the valley for 7 years.
You're a psycho. I don't know how you got.
That's what happened.
Lasted by doing that.
Valley till I die. I got a big Van Nuys tattoo on my neck.
100 degrees. Head over to iFanboy.com. Comment on this show. Talk about this week's books. Find out all of our other podcasts, as I mentioned before. There'll be a whole bunch of them, so you'll be able to find them all there at iFanboy.com.
You can follow what we do on the Twitter.com/iFanboy or Facebook.com/iFanboy.
There's a mistake.
What?
I found a mistake in the script.
Oh. Does that have anything to do with what I'm saying now, or are you just...
Get to it.
We'll get to
it. Oh, okay. I see it. I'm going to go. I'm plowing through. So it's Twitter.com/iFanboy and Facebook.com/iFanboy. And that's where you can see what the pick of the week is going to be before the show comes out. So if you want to try to check that out, just keep your eye on there. And you can follow us individually at Jim Biscardi, C.S. Kilpatrick, or Fuzzy Typewriter. Or you could even go for me, which is J.A. Flanagan.
I just go to Jim. Just
yeah,
Jim,
forget J.A. Flanagan.
Listen, if you want your feed to be 2/3 wrestling, then follow those names. That's all I know. Is this the time where we do the wrestling intervention with Paul, by the way?
Great storylines.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jason,
I've learned not to I don't criticize wrestling because I get it's just something that other people like, and it seems to be
I love when I was 13.
Yeah, a large overlap with comics, and I totally get that, and it's fine, but I don't watch it, so that's all. I don't even judge. I'm
Paul,
glad
you hear the slight song of judgment in that sense.
I'm trying not to put that in there because I don't feel it. Because I know, you know what's happening? There's enough people I know who I really like and respect who really like it, so I figure there must be something to it. Unlike music that Ron listens to.
Believe in the shield, Josh. Okay. And finally, if you dig this sort of thing, it's okay. Write a review in iTunes. Better yet, you can tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to the podcast, your grandmother, your grandfather. I think Jason Aaron said that his great-grandfather died of rabies.
Yes.
In the back of...
Crazy.
Yeah.
How much makes sense now?
Yeah. So we have 965 iTunes ratings.
We got some bad news. Josh has blown it for all of us.
Well, listen, I just looked. I saw a number. I saw the reviews. It said 957 previously. Now it's 965. By the way, slacking a little bit this week.
So let's clarify.
What we promised was.
We have 965 ratings, which is just you clicking a star key. So it's even easier. Just go there and click it. You don't have to write anything. We just need to get to 1,000 of those. In reviews, we're only at around 700. So for all these years, we've been saying 1,000 ratings, it's actually been ratings.
Yeah.
So, you know.
We want more of both.
Let's get to 1,000 ratings. All you need to do is go to the iTunes store, search iFanboy, find the show page, and click the little star tracker. That's all you got to do.
But, yeah. Before the show, Connor was reading our bad reviews out to me.
I liked them. They were good.
Yeah. Guys, I have to address this.
All right.
I was accused of hating fat people.
That was a note. It was a note in the thing. So
I don't.
But you do.
I
mean, it's fair. There's a fair criticism.
I really don't. I mean, I'm incredibly self-conscious about myself.
It's your self-loathing coming to the fore.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm very weight conscious of myself, but I really want to find that person. Like, why do you think I hate fat people? What is that about? I really want to know.
Josh.
Apparently somebody had the inside track on our large cash payout from Marvel.
Okay. Oh, thank you everyone for who's written a review or rated the show. Even if
we
it's
really do appreciate
yeah,
it.
Especially.
It's a negative review. That's great too. It's your honest opinion. We appreciate everyone's feedback. So go there and please, if 35 of you can go leave us a star rating, takes no time at all, then we would really appreciate it. And finally get Josh the help he deserves.
I just don't understand.
You're so ugly.
I really, that's a problem. I literally wake up every morning and I think, do I have any excuse that I can go to that homemade donut place down the road?
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.